A Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you on a beautiful, beautiful Friday afternoon here at Edstone. It's great to be back. We've been back at Edstone now over a week. Yesterday, we parted ways with our son. He made a quick trip home and then went straight back to Edmond to begin his career at Armstrong College. Couldn't get into the terminal with him, so we just had to wave goodbye and watch the back of his head as he walked into terminal number 2. And then as we left, you look around at another world, a world that we were certainly not anticipating, even as recently as 7 months ago, a world in which there's people walking around in full body suits, hazmat suits practically, covered in plastic from head all the way to their toes. We saw 3 people in that that garb at Heathrow, and of course, masks are now mandatory, or at least you're supposed to wear them. Some still don't, but for the most part, everyone is compliant. We'll talk a little bit more about just some of the dramatic changes, the transformation that we've seen happen to our nations just in the last few months. In so many ways, it feels like you're almost living in a science fiction movie, but it's real. It's real. We're actually seeing it all around us. Just want to follow up briefly on Lebanon. We've talked about that massive explosion that happened Tuesday. And yesterday, you had the French president, Emmanuel Macron, visiting Beirut. And you can see some of the footage there. He's the one in the white shirt right in the middle. He's just basically mobbed with people that were happy to see him. It was almost like he was the leader of Lebanon. He's there speaking. He's going directly to the people. He's speaking to the people. He's even bypassing the leaders of Lebanon. He took a shot at the prime minister even. Just yesterday with some of his comments in front of reporters, Macron said, I will propose a new political pact in Lebanon, and I will be back in September, and if they can't do it, I'll take my political responsibility. Now, Lebanon used to be a French colony, so here come the French. Here comes the European Union. And boy, if you've been reading the Trumpet magazine, you know that this should come as no surprise what we see happening in Lebanon. Will this be the crisis, this explosion in the harbor there in Beirut? Will this be the crisis that invites the European Union in? That finally does peel away Lebanon from Iranian influence. That's prophesied. Al Arabiya wrote this, after gathering the heads of Lebanon's main political parties, something Aon has been unable to do in recent months. I guess that's one of the leaders there in Lebanon. It says Macron took a jab at Prime Minister Hassan Diab before taking questions from reporters. That's according to Al Arabiya, Al Monitor. These are Lebanese sources. It says the French president said he would meet with Lebanon's political elite to propose a series of reforms that would ensure aid does not go to waste. So he wants to help Lebanon, but he doesn't want to funnel the help through the leadership because there's so much corruption. So he's going directly to the people. It says French President Emmanuel Macron pledged his country's support during a tour of the damage in Beirut, stressing that French aid would not fall into corrupt hands. Some strong statements coming from the French president. Taking to the streets of Beirut, surrounded by this happy throng of people. We've been keeping a close watch on Lebanon for years because of prophecies in your Bible, Psalm 83 and Daniel 11 in particular. Notice what my father wrote in that article from 6 years ago. I mentioned this one on yesterday's show. But he says, looking at Lebanon's demographics, you can see why Europe would intervene there, even though it refused to act in the Syrian conflict. So here Europe didn't get involved in Syria, but now here comes the French president, just a couple days after the blast. Here comes Europe. They have a part in this particular story. It says Lebanon is the only Middle Eastern country with a strong Christian population. 40% of Lebanon's people belong to a Christian denomination. The largest is the Catholic-affiliated Maronite Church. It says, by constitutional decree, the president of Lebanon must be a Maronite. So this is from my father's piece 6 years ago. And he says, finally, this heavy Christian population makes Lebanon different from the rest of the Arab world. Because of its high population of Christian Arabs, Lebanon has become a linchpin for the Psalm 83 Alliance. This is the alliance arranged or pulled together by the German-led European Union. That's why we've been saying for so long that soon Iran's influence, it won't be nearly as strong in Lebanon with its proxy Hezbollah like it has been for years. How could we make such a prediction? Well, because it's based on a prophesied alliance, Psalm 83, that has not happened in history. We've never seen an alliance like the one that's now forming. And of course, the Middle East, Jerusalem in particular, that is the powder keg. Events in that region are going to trigger World War III. And so we've got to keep our eyes on that part of the world as well. Even as we see so much happening in our nations, so many dreadful events, shocking events, as I said at the start. My father wrote an article back in March, and all through this year, if you've been listening regularly, I've referred you to these trumpet magazines that have come out, and then just a few weeks later, a few weeks after the article is posted, or a month or two after the article appears, then you see just how far in advance God's truth, God's prophecies have been with respect to world events. Tomorrow's news today. That's the trumpet magazine. So here, my father in March, the March issue, so this is an article that was probably produced in January, finalized in early February. So there's nothing in this article about the virus, the pandemic, the lockdown. He talked about the impeachment proceedings going on in January and how the United States is under attack from the radical left. And Satan, of course, is behind it. He's just brim full of hatred. He hates all of humanity, of course, but he has a special hatred, if you can call it that, an irrational hatred for the nations of Israel, the United States and Britain in particular, and certainly for spiritual Israel above all. He wants to blot out Israel. That's his goal. And my father wrote in that article, this is from March, what is happening in the Democratic Party is an extension of and intensification of a process started by the previous president, that would be Barack Obama, who said back in 2008, you know, we're just a few days away from transforming the United States. That's clip 12.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America. Now, in that March issue, the fundamental transformation, America, rather, the statement in the title is America has been fundamentally transformed. It has happened. So we better not be lulled to sleep by the Jeroboam end, the Jeroboam resurgence. Because we have lived through a frightening transformation. And of course, now we're in the month of August, and who can deny it? Fundamentally transformed. My father, in that March piece, he talks about this speech that Barack Obama gave back in November last year, where he said this is still a country that is less revolutionary than it is interested in improvement. It says, even as we Democrats, This is Barack Obama in November. Even as we push the envelope and we are bold in our vision, we also have to be rooted in reality. So what's he getting at here? Even as we push, we've got to be realistic. He said the average American doesn't think we have to completely tear down the system and remake it. The average American doesn't think this way. They don't. The average American doesn't think like we do. We're the revolutionaries. We understand that we've got to tear down the system and remake it. But the average American doesn't think that way. So in other words, we've got to be deceitful. And that they were. Now they're pretty much pulling off the camouflage clothing. And they're just revealing themselves. If you had eyes to see, you could see from some speeches like that one in November. You could see just looking at all of his associations back in 2008. And looking at what he said there just days before the election. You could see the contempt, the hatred for America's founding institutions. Michelle Obama was in, I forget the name of the podcast or some interview yesterday. But this journalist is asking her about, or rather praising all these essential workers during this pandemic. When everyone's under lockdown, you had the essential workers out there, as the reporter says, risking their lives. And then Michelle Obama, for her part, she chimes in and says that, yeah, we've got to look at this crisis, use this crisis to rethink how we distribute wealth. Never let a crisis go to waste. This is her talking about how even after COVID, that the United States needs to think about how wealth is distributed. Clip 6.
And we have to think about that in terms of how wealth is distributed, you know, how these essential people are supported, and what does that mean? A lot of these people are broke. They don't have health insurance. That if they were to get sick, as essential as they are, we have not as a society deemed it essential to make sure that they can go to the doctor and get the care that they need. And even if they can get COVID care, even if they can get tested to keep working and doing our stuff, after the effects of the virus have worn off and they are dealing with some lung issue or some breathing issue or asthma, that they don't have to wait in an emergency room for hours on end and then worry that they can even afford the prescription medication that they need to survive. I mean, we have to think about this.
We have to think about this, she says. I mean, they're nice sounding words. We're just looking out for everybody. That's good Marxist ideology. It sounds utopian. Everyone's accounted for. Everyone's cared for. Everyone has health insurance. Everyone has education. Everyone has a handout from the government. Even when COVID-19 is behind us, we've got to think about how wealth is distributed. That's communism. As I say, they're not even trying to disguise it anymore. Now it's just right out there in the open. They're calling for the revolution. It's happening in our cities. And the talking heads are justifying the violence. What a world we're living in. So very different to the one we were in just a few months ago. Last night, you can imagine why this segment caught our attention. On Tucker Carlson, he had a segment about America transformed. America transform. Now keep in mind the March issue of the Trumpet magazine, the article my father prepared at the early part of this year. America has been fundamentally transformed. And here's Tucker Carlson acknowledging that. Now back in mid-March, he was on board with the panic that the media were inciting. But he has since wised up to what the radical left has done with this crisis, how that they've used it to transform the United States of America. Here's Tucker Carlson last night, clip 1.
Things have changed so fast, so dramatically this year, that it's hard to remember what a very different country this was on New Year's morning. Back then, a little over 7 months ago, the U.S. felt politically volatile. It definitely was. There was an election coming. But it still felt fundamentally American. There was no mistaking this country for any other country. We weren't Mexico or Luxembourg or Burundi. We definitely weren't China. Yes, most of our consumer goods did seem to be manufactured in Asia, but our way of life, our system, our society, seemed to be the very opposite of China's. The Chinese were enslaved. We were free. That was the difference, and it was permanent. It would never change. Not one in 1,000 Americans doubted that. In January, for example, Dr. Anthony Fauci, at the time not yet a household name, did an interview with the Journal of the American Medical Association to talk about America's response to the Wuhan coronavirus. Fauci explained the authoritarian measures the Chinese government had taken to contain that virus. Then Fauci noted, almost offhandedly, that in America, none of that would be allowed. Watch.
They've not only shut out the traffic out of Wuhan, planes, trucks, buses, ferries, rail, but they've done it to a number of the surrounding cities. So rather than say historically it doesn't do much good, which is true, I think it's important to wait and see that maybe the Chinese, because of the state of their society, that they're able to do that. I mean, as you well know, there's no chance in the world that we could do that to Chicago or to New York or to San Francisco.
Now, he's playing a clip there from Dr. Fauci back in January. He's talking about the total lockdown in China in response to the Wuhan flu. And he says there's no way, there's no chance in the world that we could do that in the United States. Not a chance. Now, that's someone that comes from the radical left. Even the comments from Barack Obama back in November saying that, look, now the average American, they don't think like us revolutionaries. But now look at how the average American thinks in some cases. In a lot of cases, or the average Briton. You look at the way they're strapping on the full body suit before they travel, if they can even travel. Some heavy, heavy restrictions put upon Australians and their travel or inability to travel. I'll come to that in just a second here. But here is Tucker Carlson. He goes on to pick apart that quote there from Dr. Fauci, where he talks about what the Chinese put on or did to their people. Clip two.
Note his use of the word to. The Chinese government was doing these things to its people, not for them. In other words, these were punishments, not remedies. And none of that would ever be allowed here in a free country. It just couldn't happen in America. Fauci's words seem quaint now, like a fax machine or a black and white photograph. Fauci himself has since become one of the most strident advocates of a Chinese response to coronavirus, but he's hardly alone in that. Yesterday, the mayor of New York announced that he plans to erect armed checkpoints around the perimeter of the city and use plainclothes government agents to follow citizens to their homes. It would have been impossible to imagine any of that in January. Yet de Blasio's announcement didn't seem especially shocking. We're used to it now. That's how similar to China we have become. It's a big change. But like all seismic shifts, it happened incrementally before it happened overnight.
It's a seismic shift. But it has happened in increments. But when you just step back and look at the last 4 months, it's astonishing. It's astonishing how our nations, just how dramatic the transformation has been. You had the news from a while back coming out of California just a few days ago, I think this was. Someone called the police because they noticed someone next door was having a house party. Someone had some guests over to the house. And so the police had to get involved to break up this gathering. They weren't obeying the social distancing rules. This is in the same state where the same region where Mayor Garcetti, he was quite happy to allow tens of thousands of people to protest. He joined the protest. This was just in early June, a month ago. Look at that picture. You think they're minding the social distancing rules? Flooding the streets for a radical left-wing revolutionary cause. That's okay. The rules, as I've been saying this week, they don't apply to the radical left. Only to you. Only to a traditionalist. Only to a conservative. Only to someone that wants to go to church. Only to someone that wants to have a few people over to the house. There's stories out of New Jersey. Well, Tucker mentioned the example of New York. Armed guards? And then in New Jersey, you have gym owners getting arrested because they've opened up their gym so that people can exercise. You take their people outside the gym and protest, and it's just fine. It's just fine. In Nevada, you can go to the casino in droves, but you can't go to church. You can go gamble because that'll keep the economy afloat, but you can't go to church. And the Supreme Court backs that. First Amendment rights for some of the population, but not the others. And then in Australia, some of the images coming out of Australia, frightening, considering it's supposed to be a free society. You're astounded almost all the more by the lack of protest against these extreme measures. Travel bans between states. And then in particular, the crackdown in Melbourne, the state of Victoria. For a few weeks, they had residents in an apartment complex that weren't even allowed to leave the building. The buildings were guarded by police. You have scenes on Twitter of people being arrested for trying to leave, for trying to get outside. This is in Australia. This is not Wuhan. This is Australia. Quarantine, it's enforced. You fly in and they force you into 14 days of quarantine. It's not you decide. They thought, well, if we put it on the people, too many of them won't do it. So we're going to force it. We're going to force it upon the people. And if they don't comply, you could look at hundreds of dollars of fines, thousands perhaps. Saw a video this morning of a woman being arrested and then her daughter, I think it was, that was being told to put forward identification, or she was going to be arrested as well. They were outside walking, I guess, from what I can tell. Pretty amazing. This is from the New York Times this morning, and it's quoting from an Australian official. It says, this is the Australian official, people need a bit more than a suggestion to look after their own health. Says Dr. McKay, they need guidelines, they need rules, and they need to be enforced. Think about the precedent being set here. The experts have decided this is dangerous. This is what we have to do. We have to enforce this. And they're certainly enforcing it. Australia's had less than 300 total deaths due to coronavirus. That's 10 per million in Australia. 10. Not 500. Not 800 like it was in Belgium. 10 per million. You look at the bottom line, you look at the numbers in Australia. As far as COVID-19 is concerned, Australia is one of the safest places in the world to be. And I guess their leaders would say, well, that's because we've imposed these strict measures. What an overreaction. Here are the freedoms, the liberties that so many in these Israelite nations have enjoyed. They're just eroding away. And there's barely a protest. Well, the protest would be illegal. You'd be arrested for that. You can only protest for Black Lives Matter, the Marxist group. So going back to my father's article from March, America has been fundamentally transformed. And this is a theme now that Tucker Carlson is picking up on, his team at Fox News. Here's more from his segment last night, clip three.
For years, we watched our leaders prostrate themselves before the Chinese government. Most of us just assumed they were greedy. That's why they were doing it. China was paying their bills, so they bowed. We never imagined they actually admired the Chinese system. Oh, but they did. And that became clear with the arrival of the coronavirus.
They admire the Chinese system. They admire the Marxist communist system. Now think about all those quotes, all of those statements from Herbert Armstrong going back to the 1950s about the communist infiltration of our nations, the communist infiltration. That New York Times article that I mentioned a moment ago, that was the top feature in the Daily Email Blast. This is on the front page, above the fold, I presume. A 5,200-word feature on the unique U.S. failure to control the virus. See, we're still not doing a good enough job. We're still not in line. We still haven't risen to the standard set by the communist Chinese government. That's really what they're saying. The article says, slowing the coronavirus has been especially difficult for the United States because of its tradition of prioritizing individualism and missteps by the Trump administration. In other words, if not for Donald Trump and those pesky little freedoms and liberties that Americans enjoy, well, we would have conquered this contagion for sure. If we were just a little bit more like China, this would have been over by now. Listen to this. It says, first, the United States faced longstanding challenges to confronting a major pandemic. It is a large country at the nexus of the global economy with a tradition of prioritizing individualism over government restrictions. Yeah, we prioritize freedom over government-imposed restrictions. We prioritize liberty over authoritarian regimes. Well, that is enshrined in the founding documents. But as we keep hearing from the radical left, that's what needs to be torn down, just like those statues. That's what needs to be deleted. That's what needs to be canceled. It says that tradition, individualism, that tradition is one reason the United States suffers from an unequal healthcare system and has long produced worse medical outcomes. That's exactly what Michelle Obama said yesterday. It's not fair. It's not equal. Some of these essential workers, they don't even have health insurance. We've got to keep pushing. We've got to keep redistributing wealth. We've got to keep pushing to radically transform the United States. It's never enough. They're never satisfied, by the way. And they're always unified in this aim, in this ambition, to fundamentally transform the United States. It quotes one individual working at the University of Washington, an epidemiologist, who says, as an American, I think there's a lot of good to be said about our libertarian tradition, but this is the consequence. We don't succeed as well as a collective. See, as an American, I do enjoy the freedoms, but there is a price to pay. We suffer collectively. We're just not quite where these authoritarian regimes are. When they have a pandemic, I mean, look at how they can solve the problem. So they praise China. That's where the worst of it was. They praise New York. That's where the worst of it was in the United States. And they attack freedom. They attack individualism. And then, of course, they attack the scary man in the White House as well. That's the worldview that they have every morning when they get up and they go to work, writing their articles, 5,200 words. Here's where it all went wrong for the United States of America. Well, there's still, I forget, the deaths per million. America has fewer deaths per capita than Belgium, the UK, Spain, Italy, Sweden, Peru, and Chile. And yet you read the front page of the New York Times today and you would think the worst in the world would be the United States. Now, there's certainly been a lot to die from this virus. There's no getting around that. And you know where the worst of it has been? New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. Deep, dark, blue states. That's been the truth. That's the bottom line. You can see that on the tracker. You know, the one that tracks every single death? New York, far and away, the leader, the ignominious leader on that list in the United States. Listen to this from, this was actually embedded within Tucker's segment last night. He's going back to something, a Democratic political activist, Zeke Emanuel, something that he said back in April on MSNBC. This is clip 4.
Realistically, COVID-19 will be here for the next 18 months or more. We will not be able to return to normalcy until we find a vaccine or effective medications. Is all that economic pain worth trying to stop COVID-19? The truth is, we have no choice.
Well, we just have no choice. It's going to go on for 18 months, and it's not going to be normal again. And you have no choice. You have no choice? You mean the American people have no say? They have no choice in this matter? That's someone in April revealing quite a lot from the Democrat playbook. This is our opportunity. We can't let this crisis go to waste. We've got to use this to redistribute wealth. We've got to use this to impose our will on the people. Here's how Tucker Carlson responded to this, clip 5.
Oh, the truth is we have no choice. Except in a democracy, we always have a choice. That's why it's different from an autocracy. In a democracy, on the big questions, the public gets to decide what the public wants. The people rule. That's the whole point of the American system. But the left had no plans to let the public decide anything. So instead, they issued resolute decrees. Remain at home. Wear a mask. Do not congregate with others. No one asked voters what they thought about any of this. Democracy played no role in it. The orders came down. Men with guns enforced the orders. The government used sophisticated technology to track down anyone who disobeyed them. Just like in China.
Just like in China. My father's article from March, America has been fundamentally transformed. That was before we were saying anything about the Wuhan flu, coronavirus. And we know what happened in mid-March and in April. And now here we are. Here we are a few months on from that. And who would have ever thought it would be like it is today? What did Tucker say right at the top of his segment? Transformation, and it's happened in these little incremental steps. But boy, look at where we are today. You can see why. Well, the article in the New York Times talks about how that we haven't been strict enough with these heavy-handed measures. And then, of course, the other problem has been Donald Trump. This is from the article. It says, in no other high-income country and in only a few countries, period, have political leaders departed from expert advice as frequently and significantly as the Trump administration. It says, in recent days, Mr. Trump has continued the theme, offering a torrent of misleading statistics in his public appearances that make the situation sound less dire than it is. Now, these would be the same people that would say New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts have done a fantastic job. And that's where the epicenter has been. Still, even as they've been screaming about Florida and Texas and Arizona, still, look at the bottom line. They won't do it. They won't do it. There was a Politico piece the other day saying how that New Jersey is leading the way. New Jersey has the most deaths per million than any state in the United States. Even higher than New York. And Politico is pointing to them. New Jersey has flattened the curve. Well, that's because they've killed all the elderly in the elderly homes. Well, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but they've been the worst examples because of those policies that they've laid down on elderly care centers. We've got into that plenty before. Here's CBS yesterday coming around. Finally, there's a few mainstream reports that are pointing out the dreadful response in New York and those neighboring states. This in particular, though, he focuses on New York. This is from CBS, clip 8.
Good morning. I don't know if you know this, but here in the U.S., more than 40,000 nursing home residents are believed to have died from the coronavirus, and 6,500 of those deaths happen in the state of New York. There are hearings being held in New York to address those deaths and the policies that may have led to some of them. In New York, around 6,500 people are believed to have died of the coronavirus in nursing homes and long-term care facilities.
They have to readmit COVID-positive residents, but only if they have the ability to provide the adequate level of care.
Governor Andrew Cuomo and the Department of Health have been criticized for directing those facilities back in March to take in coronavirus patients to relieve stress on the hospitals. After backlash, they added a requirement that was in May that hospitals could not discharge patients unless they tested negative.
The best part of that segment is the reporter at the beginning saying to the host back in the studio, I don't know if you know this. And then he talks about the nursing home massacre. Yeah, the mainstream doesn't know much about it because they've been covering it up or they haven't been reporting much about it. But you got there at the tail end of that segment and the reporter saying that, you know, after criticism, then he finally reversed it in May. It just went on for weeks and weeks and weeks as they sent sick patients, COVID-19 positives, into elderly care centers that weren't even equipped with quarantine measures and even the kind of supplies that they need that a hospital would have. And so thousands died, 40,000 nursing home residents in the United States, 6,500 in New York alone, thousands upon thousands of deaths. Even in the New York Times piece, you have to get about 4,000 words into it. But notice these two paragraphs. This morning, it says, like much of Europe, New York responded too slowly to the first wave of the virus. As late as March 15, Mayor Bill de Blasio encouraged people to go to their neighborhood bar. Soon, the city and state were overwhelmed. Ambulances wailed day and night. Hospitals filled to the breaking point. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo, a Democrat like Mr. de Blasio, was slow to protect nursing home residents, and thousands died. He was slow to protect them, and thousands died. So who's responsible? Well, it says here, earlier action in New York could have saved a significant number of lives, epidemiologists say. And then the New York Times quickly moves on. A couple of paragraphs, a few words on it, so that they can say, down the road, so that historians can come along and say, well, see, the New York Times, they did cover it, the nursing home massacre. They haven't been covering it. They haven't been exposing just the appalling leadership, the dreadful leadership in some of these states. Instead, they've been attacking the Republican governors in Texas, Florida, and so on. That's always the agenda. Go after the red states. Go after Donald Trump. Cuomo, by the way, he's seen a lot of his top earners leaving the city, New York City, leaving the state even. And he's pleading with them to come back. This is what he said in a press conference a few days ago, clip 9.
We're trying to get people to come back. We're trying to get them to come back. COVID's under control. We're going to make progress helping the homeless. We're going to clean up the graffiti. We're going to fix crime. On top of that, you want to say, and by the way, when you come back, you're going to get a big tax increase. Our population, 1% of the population pays 50% of the taxes. And they're the most mobile people on the globe. I literally talk to people all day long who are now in the Hamptons house, who also lived here, or in their Hudson Valley house, or in their Connecticut weekend house. And I say, you got to come back. when are you coming back? We'll go to dinner. I'll buy you a drink. Come over. I'll cook. They're not coming back right now.
They're not coming back for his cooking, I guess. He's having some of his highest earners are leaving the state, leaving New York City. Why would they leave New York City? Because of skyrocketing crime. Because graffiti all over Fifth Avenue. Because of the leadership, the poor leadership. And of course, he's looking at the bottom line. He's telling state legislators there, look, don't add more taxes to fix these problems because we need people to move back. We need taxpayers to move back to New York. They're fleeing these cities that have been under Democrat leadership for decades. 1% of the earners in New York pay 50% of the taxes. Well, you can begin to feel that pinch immediately if you lose a few millionaires, a few billionaires. You think about, again, though, the radical transformation. We've quoted numerous times that piece from a couple weeks ago, the COVID coup, how that the radical left, when they saw this virus coming over the horizon, well, this was the obvious next wave of attack to hurl at President Trump. President Trump, keep in mind, is, in their minds, he's the imposter. He's resisting against the radical transformation. So he has to be removed. He has to be destroyed. He's in their way. So they see this virus come along, and as the American mind brought out, no conspiracy was necessary or possible because it is real. It's a real virus. It's a real crisis. But they're using it to cause a lot more trouble, to bring a lot more problems on the United States. It says the existing party sentiment and like-mindedness were enough to produce the unanimity and uniformity with which the ruling class has used the COVID-19 event to produce, stoke, and maintain fear to energize its constituencies' agendas in pursuit of its power. Like my father has said, they will do anything to seize and hold on to power. That's what it's about for these anarchists, these Marxist revolutionaries. Never letting a crisis go to waste. Go back to that March issue of the Trumpet magazine from earlier this year. This was several months ago. And just think of the title. America has been fundamentally transformed. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. from the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just a few comments here quickly coming in from listeners. One says, can we look at the bird feeder again? We look forward to the program at 5 a.m. each morning. So we'll have to secure some bird feeder footage to remind our viewers, our listeners, how much we enjoy the birds here at Edstone. Over the past week, I haven't seen the my favorite, the woodpecker, however. So the, what's the name of that again? The world woodpecker? Something like that. Oh, well. I'll have to look up my my bird book again. Anyway, another one here says, first time seeing this show. It's very good. Another one says, is this a Monday through Friday show? Would rather watch this than the cable news. Another one says, thank God for using Mr. Flurry as an instrument to spread the good news for everyone. Good morning, another one writes. TD crew, always looking forward to this program. Thank you for your love and concern. And then finally, thank you for the truth. Today's broadcast is what the world needs to hear. On yesterday's program, I talked there in the second half, although I didn't get to Lincoln by the end of it. But I did talk about that effort, the great spotted woodpecker. There we go. I knew it was something great. The great spotted woodpecker. Look it up. A beautiful, beautiful bird. We used to have them come in pairs to feed off the bird feeder. So maybe they've moved on. We'll have to lure them back. In any event, following on yesterday's show, this satanic attempt or effort to delete our history, as my father writes in The Former Prophets, he said, history prophesies the fate of nations, whether they will thrive or collapse. This is a law of history. It's a law. And that's why you can't delete it. Or if you do, you're really ruining your future. There's so much ignorance on display. My father he's focused, by the way, on history quite a lot. Speaking of how out front the March trumpet was, you go back to his program on May the 1st. This is before the explosion of violence at the end of May and early June. On May 1st, my father, this was the modern interpretation of history. That was a program before all of the riots ensued. He said on that program, how have we come to such a miserable, hateful, grossly inaccurate perspective on even our own history? And what does this mean for our future? What does it mean when you delete your own history? Well, so many of our educators are working to do just that, especially the history that has been shaped by God, especially the history involving our nations, the nations that were prophesied to be the recipients of these fantastic, superabundant blessings, the United States and Britain. Study the United States and Britain in prophecy. See what your Bible says about our nations and about what was to come upon them in the last days, and how that we would squander away all of these blessings, all of this prosperity and wealth, all of this power and influence. It's all there in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. My father said in that program, leaving God out of history brings chaos and confusion. The fact is, only God can save us from our problems. Only God can do it. That was back in May. And then my father, in response to that first wave of rioting at the end of May and early June, you may remember another Key of David program, how Abraham Lincoln won the Civil War. How did he do it? How did he heal the breach between the North and the South? How did he bring the nation together? How did he unify America? He said on that program, if we were to actually follow the example of Lincoln and many Americans during the Civil War, we could avoid that bloody Civil War. We could avoid it altogether. He's basically saying we're headed for another Civil War. And how could we avoid it? Well, if we'd follow in the example of Abraham Lincoln. Back over the July 4th weekend, President Trump gave the speech there at Mount Rushmore in front of those four great presidents, carved into that stone mountain. And Abraham Lincoln was one of them. Here's what the president said during his speech, clip 10.
Abraham Lincoln, the savior of our Union, was a self-taught country lawyer who grew up in a log cabin on the American frontier. The first Republican president, he rose to high office from obscurity based on a force and clarity of his anti-slavery convictions, very, very strong convictions.
That's the president talking about Abraham Lincoln, America's 16th president, the savior of the Union. I mentioned the program my father did in June. He had another classic Key of David program from back in the mid-1990s. This takes us 25 years back, and that was when my father was doing more programs on location, and we actually took the TV crew up to Gettysburg, and he gave a program on Thanksgiving, or that we played on Thanksgiving weekend. In fact, we played it on Thanksgiving a number of times over the years. And if you go back, I'll have to try to secure the soundbite for tomorrow or rather next week. But if you go through that program, right at the end of the show, my father said that Lincoln sounded like a prophet of God when he was talking about healing the wounds of the nation, bringing the United States together, and then giving God thanks for all the blessings, and then appealing to God through fasting and prayer because of our many sins. That's pretty unusual. That is pretty unusual for an American president to call on all of the nation to humble themselves, to beseech God in prayer, to draw near to God. And of course, when you look at that man's life, President Trump touched on a little bit of it there in that soundbite, what led up to his presidency. He was someone who studied his Bible. He was someone who looked to God in his own way. He didn't understand all of God's truth. He wasn't a regular member at a weekly church, but he certainly understood that it was the hand of God that brought on the blessings that Americans had enjoyed during the 1800s. We went through Carl Sandburg's abridged biography earlier this year. As it says on our website, Lincoln was the president during the most divided era in American history. It says, currently the United States is on the path to experiencing an even greater tragedy than the Civil War. You know, you look back on these 7 months, like Tucker Carlson brought out last night, and it is just shocking, the transformation. But then you look at all of these trumpet magazines, you look at all of these Key of David, even something as simple as our book club back in January here at Edstone, as we were reading and studying the life of Abraham Lincoln. And as my father said on that recent program, if we get into his life, if we study the way he solved that great crisis of the 1860s, well, we could avoid the oncoming crisis today. My point is that God has been communicating with his church. He has been communicating to you through this program, through the Key of David, through the Trumpet magazine, through the Trumpet website. Surely you can see God's hand in inspiring and empowering his church, in giving, as one of the listeners I just read to you, in giving the listeners, the viewers, the readers of the Trumpet magazine, giving them real hope, the hope of the gospel, the true gospel message, which is the soon coming kingdom of God, God establishing his government on this earth, his family government. administering his rule, his laws over all the earth. That's the solution to the problems that we just see piling high. This world it's got problems piling high. And they just get worse and worse and worse. And we don't know how to solve them, but there is a solution. If we were to actually follow the example of Abraham Lincoln and many Americans during the Civil War, as my father said, we could avoid another bloody Civil War. Well, next week we'll continue with our study of this great president's life. You can look forward to that on Monday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week. And we'll see you next week.